You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall.
Yo.
And me, Brian. Right. First of the week in JoJo's news. There's a picture now of the Josuke costume on the JoJo site.
That's right.
There is.
So what do you think of it?
Looks about right, doesn't it?
It does, yes. I like that they've just stripped it of enough detail to make it practical.
Mm. Yeah, get rid of some of those extraneous giant buttons or whatever they are.
But it's still very recognizable. It also looks very cartoonish.
Yeah.
I'm kind of hoping like a lot of the background guys look as cartoonish, if that makes sense. Obviously, you know, only main characters will be as us, they crazily fucking dressed, you know.
Yeah.
I kind of like the open front. This is that. Josuke is probably very warm under that big jacket. Like him, but I'd like to give him this option. We can just have it out open instead.
Yeah, weirdly, the thing it reminds me of is Warren Beatty's Dick Tracy.
Okay.
In terms of costume design, in that it looks a little too large for a normal human being would wear, but a cartoon human being would wear it. Like everything's just a little bit too big.
The way I'd say it is like it looks kind of like a costume, or that someone that they have really good tailors in this place and can make you some really nice things.
I put it down to Joe's case, the teenagers who are still grown into it.
It's his big brother's jacket.
But you definitely makes you want to see what everyone else's costumes look like as well.
Yeah.
Because they've got the hair right as well, which makes you think.
I want to see what they do with Jotaro.
Yeah.
How they pull off that optical illusion.
Yes.
Like, it's a hat that doesn't make any logical sense. Hat, hair, thing. I don't even know what you call
it. They could, like, do it as, like, a combination hat and wig.
What if they do it so that the hat actually, like, disappears at the back of his head? And the back of his head is just his hair underneath the hat? You know what I mean? Like, the back of his hat got chopped off with some scissors. Because that's the only way I can think of making it look normal.
Right, onto the anime we watched last week. So it's going to be a struggle for us all to remember what happened.
Mm.
Well, a struggle for me at least.
We'll figure it out.
Yep.
Yeah, first up, Dragon Ball Super Episode 72. Will there be a counter... Will there be an ability to say the title of the episode?
It won't be that anyway, no.
Will there be a counterattack? The Invisible Killing Strike...
So, who called this? Because someone called this.
Oh, right? I'm sure it's something pretty obvious.
Yes, I said that he hired Hit to hit.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think any of us called that Goku restarted his own heart with an attack.
Oh, no, I meant who called the Hit.
Oh, it's pretty obvious that, there was somebody up high, at least, was involved in it, because otherwise how would you get Hit into Universe 7? So,
yeah.
And also, Wiz seemed to have an idea of what was going on.
Yeah.
I thought he'd got that magic box that could travel across dimensions and shit.
Didn't he? Sure, he didn't win a tournament, sure.
Oh, yeah, if he won, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he wasn't going to nick it. It was Frost who was going to nick it.
Yeah. We start where I guess we started the last episode. With everyone kind of freaking out that Goku's dead. Piccolo tries to give him some, they're like chest compressions, but I assume he's just pumping ki in there.
Yes.
Based off the little explosions that are happening.
Yeah, that's really, which would get really, really powerfully, you know.
That too, yeah. But fortunately, Goku figured this might happen, I guess. And threw a ball of energy up into the sky. And as we know, balls of energy are affected by gravity. And it fell back down on top of him, giving him a jump start to his heart or something.
It was kind of like the Dragon Ball version of all electricity can restart all hearts that Hollywood likes to go with.
Yeah, so ki is ki in this case, and like the fact that his little fucking kid has to explain it to him is like, Dad, you can't go fight an assassin because Mam will be sad if you die.
It's like, grand. I've already died before and it was okay, so
I've died at least twice. Well, three times now.
That's how he knows that his mum is going to be upset.
Yeah, because he was there. He was born into a frigging fatherless household because his dad was fucking dead. Dear, oh dear. Poor kid. I really feel bad for him, and Goku's such a dick.
And just later on, when she turns up dinner, it's like, what was going on here? Someone tried to kill you, my dear husband. I'm so sorry about that. And then he's going, oh, yeah, totally. Someone's trying to kill me. Vegeta, not a word about this, all right?
Yeah, so, and then they basically have a fight for most of the episode.
Yeah, he's trying to figure out his new teleporting. It looks like a teleporting punch, but then it's like it's invisible energy is what he figures out.
Yeah, we learned that he, rather than stop time, he skips time and he stores the time that he's skipped.
So he can hide in an alternate dimension so you can see him but not hit him or something?
Yes. Yeah, kind of it's, Vados is explaining it to Champa and Champa...
And Champa doesn't understand.
No.
It's like didn't they mention something like that in Cowboy Bebop where like, no, when things that go through the gates, you can observe them but you can't interact with them?
Yeah, I guess because he's in a different dimension, similar physics maybe, to Cowboy Bebop, oddly enough.
Yeah, and Hit himself doesn't know that it's Goku who's hiding him because Goku went through Vados.
Well, he went through Champa. Sorry, not through Champa. He went through, what's Vados' brother's name? God damn it, why can't I remember? Whis. He went to Whis, and Whis called his sister, and his sister called Hit.
Yes.
So even Hit didn't know, yeah.
And Vegeta gets back to Earth early by promising them some steak with Granny's secret sauce on it. Something that he has invented.
Because, yeah, I'm not sure he knew his Granny, right?
Yes.
His warrior race Granny.
And, yeah, then he forgets that the lie he's told until later on in the episode. And he goes, oh, damn it.
Like, I didn't enjoy the prior episode as much, but this one has a bunch of kind of jokes lifted into it, and it kind of takes the deadly serious nature, and it's just like Goku's an asshole is kind of the result of it. So I kind of preferred this one. It had a lot more fun to it.
Yeah, and Hit decides that he's not going to rush this contract.
Yeah. I'm going to take my time killing you.
Yes.
Yeah. But he's having like I think Champa was giving out to him. It's like, hey, he's an assassin. He shouldn't be enjoying this fight so much. Because he's having a good time, like, because Goku's figuring him out and he's trying to get around Goku figuring him out.
Yeah, it's like they're becoming friends.
By trying to murder each other.
Yeah. Isn't Vados saying, well, right now he's not hit the assassin, he's hit the martial artist. So, you know, he's kind of, he's kind of on the clock, but also he's kind of off the clock. I don't know.
I guess that's how Goku made most of his friends, though, when you think about it.
That is true, yes. And, yeah.
The fastest way to a man's heart is with your fist.
Or try to kill him, and then your friends after, yeah.
And then next week, Gohan is moonlighting as a stuntman.
Hasn't he already done that before? I feel for sure he had to dress up as Great Saiyaman. Yeah, as a stuntman in a Great Saiyaman movie. I feel like that was like a plot from the old one.
Maybe.
I recall him doing special effects things and then just flying away into the gasps of the film crew. I don't know, maybe this is a sequel?
Could be. That's possibly why they've called him up again.
Yeah.
And I think Jacko's involved as well, but I can't remember seeing him in the trailer.
Okay.
But the episode description I saw seemed to indicate that Jacko was somehow involved.
Oh, more Jacko.
Jacko was there too.
Yes. I think it's something like he's lost a criminal or something. So maybe I'm going to guess that the criminal shows up and Gohan thinks it's part of the movie.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense. That's total sitcom fodder.
Yes. Because they're just biding their time with sitcom fodder until they get to the big mega plot in February.
I'm fine with that. I'm enjoying that stuff.
Oh, yeah, same here.
It hasn't got back up to baseball episode just yet, but it might do.
No. There was some new off-model art in this episode.
There was.
In fact, it was off-model, and I still actually kind of quite liked it. Like, super tall Whis. Super tall, handsome Whis was like a very weird off-model, but it wasn't like... It still looked good. Yeah, it still.
Yeah, he made it work.
The design all made sense within the image. It just wasn't quite the Whis we were used to.
Yeah, what was going on with Ciampa? It's like he was like having an allergic reaction to.
Yeah, I was going to say it looked like he was stung by something. unless he's just put on more weight since the baseball game, thus negating any weight he lost. Yeah, strange.
Right, on to Bono, episode 25. I've put the wrong title down.
It's What the Clouds Bring.
Yes.
Hmm. I think it's that they're hanging around, and or Bono and Raccoon.
Oh, Raccoon.
No, Chipmunk runs
up. Oh, yeah,
up
Raccoon runs it through, yes.
Yeah, Chipmunk is really worried because there's a big cloud coming, and that'll make everyone hazy, I think was his description.
Yeah, that felt like a bad translation to me.
I feel like you're trying to say something else. I have a funny feeling there's a word for the emotional state you're going for. Kind of like...
Are they like saying in Japanese, days, like, muya muya or something?
You feel a bit off.
Yeah, under the weather was what I was thinking. But
okay. Like, even if they said dazed or something.
But it's like an onomatic word that he seems to be saying, which I'm guessing hazy might be like the literal translation, or maybe, but it didn't seem to really fit.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is obviously, we've brought this up before, occasionally there seems to be like a concept they're explaining, which doesn't seem to get translated
into
English very well.
Because they're translating it either literally or whatever the... Because they might be, as little kids and stuff, they might be using the correct terms. So, you know, they're using some kid version of that kind of feeling.
Maybe Bono was so far above our way of thinking, man. We kind of been close to comprehending it with our known words. We've got to invent a language to try and understand it.
Mm.
Anyway, seasonal affective disorder, or whatever. Seems to be what it is. It's basically Chipmunk is feeling a little blue whenever it's overcast.
Yeah, and every one of his explanations to Raccoon, Raccoon's like, okay, motherfucker, explain it to me so I don't beat you up. And what his first explanation was, I let me feel a bit bad, and then I was grand. And the other one was like he was going up a hill and he was getting tired because a hazy cloud was coming over, and then the cloud went away and he was fine. And it's like Raccoon's like, yeah, because you got your breath. You took a little rest. And he's defiantly trying to sit down and not act hazy while the cloud goes over him.
And so Chipmunk panics. And
because they've made a bet, you know.
Yes. They bet that Chipmunk has to do anything that Raccoon asks, because Raccoon didn't want to take Chipmunk's original offer of tying Chipmunk's tail in a knot.
Which is the thing he hates the most. So Raccoon offers him, okay, these are the three things I hate the most. What is it? Having a stick tied to your bag.
Yeah, that hurts so much because you can't bend over.
Yeah.
Having a... walking around with a stone between your toes.
That does suck.
And then having a stone wedged up your nose. In this case, also stones.
Yeah, and Chipmunk picks the second option, and Raccoon's like, oh, okay. that's fine. Because he could be just bullshitting. But, Chipmunk is trying to get him to act hazy. Again, not the correct word.
By swinging a rock at his head.
Yes. You would feel pretty off if you had, had like a minor concussion to your head.
Well, it's kind of like the threat of it. I think he's threatening to hit him in the head with a rock rather than actually hitting him.
Because I don't think he could actually reach him based on how it was drawn. The angle of the swing would have swung over the top of his head.
But it's kind of like the thing of, I could be hit.
Yes.
And that's trying to make him turn him off, you know?
He knows it's happening behind him.
So hazy can mean this feeling of being a bit off, but also this vague sense of unease.
And the way it's coming in from off the side of the screen, you're not seeing the full swing as a viewer. You're only seeing it as it swings towards his head.
Yeah, you're only getting that part of the arc, yeah.
Yeah. And I think Chipmunk's got those eyebrows on as he is watching.
He's got
the
serious eyebrows most of the time, yeah.
The go-go eyebrows shooting the kill.
And then a Raccoon suggests they try the swinging thing. It's like, oh, man, anyone would act hazy under these conditions. Look, we'll get Bono to do it. And Bono does it and just kind of gently stops him from swinging, thus negating any testing sort of thing. Yeah, it's an odd episode.
Anyway, Sister's back next week.
Yay, or boo. Mm,
good for the audience. Bad for Chipmunk.
Yes.
And there was no Shonen Ashibe Gogo Goma-chan. That's back January 10th in an episode apparently called Goma-chan is Great.
Well, we know that.
But we did have episode 13 of Ninja Girl and Samurai Master, the situation at Inabayama Castle.
So, like, this happened, right?
Yes.
Like it happened.
Except without, like, obviously, Ninja Girl.
Yes.
She could have been there, too.
She could have been there.
She's a good ninja. She would keep a low profile.
That's it, yeah. She's not written into the history books. Because, this seems like a thing that I've seen happen, like, in various different...
In Drifters.
In Drifters, I suppose. But, yeah, historically, this is kind of like the Wooden Horse of Troy kind of situation.
Yes. So, basically, to teach his boss a lesson, it's Henby, isn't it, the guy's name?
Henby, yeah.
Yeah.
Decides to take over the castle.
Well, initially it looks like he's trying to fucking form a coup, but yeah. It turns out it's like, now you know, stop boozing and hanging around women all the time. under the pretense of delivering medicine for his little brother,
yes,
with him and a couple of guys, they hop into the castle, take some weapons they'd previously stored there, storm the castle from the inside, and then let a bunch of dudes, like, I think his dad came with like 1,000 men or something like that, from the outside with torches.
Yeah.
But just for the thing of saying, it's like, hey, I'm just proving a point here. That could easily be taken.
Yeah, because the joke is like, oh, we're doing this very easily. With so few numbers, we're taking over. And then all of a sudden, like, bang, another 1,000 people show up.
Yeah, it's like, that was the joke as well, where he's like, oh, I'm going to take these 10 dudes in. It's like, I think 10's too many. All right, you guys stay back. Your backups.
This is a seeking mission.
And yeah, we kind of get the reactions of Nobunaga going like, wait, what? that she helped him take the castle and stuff.
Yes.
Well, okay, because she came back safe.
Yes. And then forgives her, and then he's about to kill Hideyoshi just for squashing some parmesans. And they decide that rather than using this opportunity to destroy the Sato clan, they will just get their retainers to swap sides.
Yeah. This is kind of like weakening their base of power.
Because we already know they seem to be not too impressed with this. Because he does not learn the lesson either. We see him return to the castle after Hanbi's left, and he's back to boozing and womanizing.
Well, we need to go reflect on our misdeeds by drinking up more.
Yeah, that was the thing as well. Chidori was didn't know where the leader was, because there was like a fat dude with a face drawn on his belly for no reason that anyone could figure out in the plot. I guess because he was drunk. And it's like, where is he? Is he behind the fat guy? It's like, no, that's the leader. Yeah.
Yep, and this continues into the new year.
Excellent.
Ray.
To keep up our Oda Nobunaga quotient.
He has to be in at least two, if not three shows. Yeah.
I was going to say, yeah, he may be in next week's Time Boca as well. But
Well, yeah, they've done like three episodes in the period when he was around. So, dear.
Talking of the man, Drifters episode 12, Staring at Shinsengumi, The Song of the Fervid Kyushu Man, in which it's all out war in the capital of the Ort Empire.
Well, a lot of it's like very actiony, but it's also kind of really gets you into the idea of tactics and such.
Yes. And also, again, behaving like a role-playing character.
It's like, how can I bend the rules?
How can I just be a dick to this bad guy?
Like, someone has got to have tried the thing of like, okay, you can't see far enough. What if I get in these two guys' shoulders? You know what I mean? That kind of just like, yeah, I guess technically you could do that.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that bit. Because that was the best bit of like merging the gag style of the animation with the actual storyline so far.
Yeah. They've done a pretty good job of that.
Yeah, so basically the episode is them laying an elaborate trap for the... N's forces.
Yeah, it's initially Nobunaga sees that they're reacting in a kind of tactily way to their having guns and snipers on the roof and freaking your man and a bunch of crazy dwarves just running in carving up motherfuckers. And he's like, okay, they know this shit, but they're not as good a strategy as me. That kind of way, yeah.
Yeah, and he basically sends Toyao to annoy their leader.
I love his pretense of, it's like, he thinks we're all fucking leaders, but little does he know, that's our main leader, and him just sweating profusely, hoping no one can call him on this really obvious lie.
Yeah. And your man, Hishikata, the leader of the End Forces, some kind of beef with the Shimazu clan.
Yes.
I assume if I knew my history a little better, I might know, but...
That's the assumption here and there, you know, but, you know, if they're wanting to build up, this guy hates Toyohisa, or at least he's keen a lot more. They probably could have built it up a bit, for sure.
But you do have Toyohisa kind of going like, oh, fucking my ancestors fuck with you, huh? Oh, this is great. He's just, like, delighting in it.
My favorite bit, because he could apparently summon the ghosts
of samurai or
his
something.
Men, I think, possibly. And there's one point where they're apologizing for his
behavior. They're apologizing to
the
dwarf.
Yes.
Yeah, the dwarfs, they're just like, they kind of nod their heads. The exchange of things is like, yeah, we're both under the leadership of crazy motherfuckers. That was pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, I forgot the dwarf had made himself like a sawed-off shotgun as well. But
that thing's a blunderbuss, man. He's full of junk and shot out.
Yeah, full of fucking shrapnel and shit, yeah. Oh, dear.
But yeah, basically they abandon the Imperial building, lure all the troops into the Imperial building, and then fire in through the windows.
Well, fire in through the windows and use the stone walls evilly again.
Yes. And the guys from the Sacred Army of Thebes are like even more impressed about the power of guns at close range.
They're like, holy shit, we're wrecking these fuckers.
It's like, wow, he's like, he was there, he was alive, and he was dead. It's just like that. It's just too easy.
And I mean, like, besides telling them to evacuate the Capitol building, which is pretty good strategy because obviously that's kind of what they're going for, and they're pretending to just set the city on fire and cause chaos. He also must have instructed them to draw his face on the barrels of gunpowder in the place just so he could go like, ha ha ha.
That's a real like Lupin the Third type of movie. Isn't it?
It is, yeah.
You have just been punked by Oda Nobunaga.
I mean, they're all going to die, but at least they'll know who the fuck killed them.
I think that's pretty much it. Was there anything
It's just setting up a lot of things to come.
There's the bit where the Count is wondering if he knows who the Black King is.
Yeah, yeah, and he's got a good idea of everyone else. A lot of people get a lot of stuff to work with in this one. You kind of get Toyohisa kind of being really excited to fight someone who's a samurai, and just them turning it into an all-out brawl at the end. Yes. They're just beating the shit out of each other, where your man's been told by the Black King, he's like, hey, withdraw, you know, come on back. It's good.
No, you can't, because
I gotta beat up this asshole.
He keeps like jumping in windows and then, you know, messing around with me and calling me names. Like, I can't let that this lie. It's just what he wants him to do.
Throwing food in his face.
Yeah, he threw some soup in his face. Not like to blind him or anything, just because it was gross.
Yeah, because Toyohisa's argument is like, there's no honor in a fight.
Yeah,
once you're dead, who's gonna tell that it didn't fight honorably?
he's got a point.
Yeah, but it serves the purpose as well of keeping him away from his main forces. We can't strategize with them.
Yeah, yeah. And you also have Hannibal explaining. Wasn't it Hannibal's plan to?
It was, yes.
It was his plan.
Put all the berries in one place and squash them.
They're much better squashed, and it's easier to squash them in one place. Let me demonstrate by stomping on berries I throw on the ground. And it's like, Hannibal, you're crazy, but in a genius way.
You've done it again.
And the really slow reaction of Nobunaga going like, wait a minute, is he talking about this?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's talking about this, dude.
Yeah, it's not just that when he first appears, just putting his head over Oda's shoulder.
It's like, hey, what's up?
With that really intelligent look on his face. And then he says something which sounds stupid, but then it was really super intelligent.
Yeah, yeah. So enjoying the show. Like, all the characters are pretty fun. I said the one who's going to get to be the least fun is, what's your one's name who uses the stone wall thing?
Olminu.
Yeah, Olminu, because she's just lamenting it. I was like, holy shit, they're using my fucking defensive spells for murdering again. Yeah, she doesn't really get as much. I mean, like, obviously she does that and gets them killed, but she's really distraught about it. So it wasn't really her intent, I suppose, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, but this kind of, it does feel like it starts a bit abruptly, but it's just kind of the nature of how they're adapting it, where they kind of have to stop just here, and, you know, there's a lot of things that are going to come down the line.
Okay.
So, you know, so which may, you know, for some people, it may not seem like a satisfactory kind of season finale, whatever it is. But that's just the way that by the best they could have done with the way the comic is at the moment.
Oh, yeah, I remember the final thing is the Ends have got a new recruit, haven't they?
They have Mitsuhide, the man who betrayed Nobunaga, or at least one of them anyway.
Yes.
One of the many.
It basically seems to be like, I'll be an End as long as I get to kill Nobunaga again.
Ah, dear.
And the guy who was the captain of the Yamato is he's got two other guys with him in his chambers.
I assume one guy is like Lawrence of Arabia, right? Because he's dressed in like the kind of Arab gear, but he appears to be like a blonde dude. And the other guy I don't recognize. So
yeah.
Maybe. But yeah, he's obviously making his own alliances. And I'm really, this kind of show, I'm really curious about the world building.
Yeah.
I should probably just start reading it.
Yes, because it literally is all world building. It's these characters from outside the world coming in and reshaping it too.
Yeah, and it's super fun for that.
Their will. Mm. Yeah, that was Drifters. It was a good way to spend 12 episodes. Looking forward to whenever we get some more.
Yeah.
Okay, next up, let's go with Time Bokan. I put the name of the Bono episode there. That's what's confused me.
What was it? Santa Claus is really a blank.
Yes. And it turns out Santa Claus is really a reindeer.
Santa Claus is a red-nosed reindeer, and Rudolph is a burly Santa Claus man. Who has, like, a traditional Santa Claus face, but, like, is a huge fucking wrestler dude.
Yes.
Who pulls the sleigh. That's why he's so buff.
And it's a Christmas miracle. The bad guys win.
Well,
these things turn out that everybody gets what they want, pretty much.
I mean, like, they got the guy who has the white beard and the hat and everything to deliver the presents. So, technically, the guy who looked like Santa did deliver the presents, thus making kids think he's Santa.
Yes.
Like, but Look, Santa and Rudolph delivered presents on the 24th of December, turning over the world. Didn't say necessarily say which is which, but that's what happened.
Yes,
because we did see how it was happening previously, was that the reindeer was sneaking in people's houses, leaving the presents.
Just dropping presents with its mouth, yeah. Oh, dear.
Oh, this was a great episode. Another muscle Santa, like the Brave Beat Santa from last year.
That's the official Santa now, right? The muscle Santa.
Yes. Oh, okay. This can't be a coincidence.
But this one is...
It's also the true history. So this is obviously
exactly
one way
yeah,
about that.
Yeah.
He's not as. This one's more threatening though than the guy from Brave Beats.
Oh, because he's like, I love kids, and it's like, I love them so much that I make a creepy face when I'm around them because I'm so nervous.
Yeah.
And that's why B. Marshall has a vendetta against him.
Yes.
He's like, Santa Claus, you've returned to threaten me once more.
Oh, dear.
And the best bit, because she's altered the past now, and the narrator wonders, says, but how did she see it? How was she scared?
Because she told him to go into kids' rooms and deliver presents.
But he explains it. That is a time paradox. Get your parents to explain what that is.
Well, Billy, if you went back in time and killed my father, then I wouldn't be born, but you would be born. But how could you have went back in time to kill my father? That's a paradox.
And this was also the episode, wasn't it, where there was loads of references to the people watching it who aren't kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because this does quite well in the ratings, and I assume they've got the demographics in where they got it right in the script for this one, because...
Mm.
They make a couple of jokes, breaking the fourth rule, speaking to the viewers.
Well, I guess it's like a Christmas special, so you can be a little loosey goosey with the rules. Yeah,
yeah, and it's this show as well. So.
That too.
You get to see all the robots at once.
Hooray! Even the guys we haven't seen yet. They all have a little catchphrase.
Yeah, because they all help get the presents across the world. Yeah, I enjoyed this. It was a nice Christmas episode.
Mm.
Yes.
Definitely better than
Haybots. Surprisingly, it doesn't try and ruin Christmas.
No.
Like it tries to ruin all of it, the rest of history. Oh, dear.
And it's Hattori Hanzo next week, isn't it?
Yeah.
It does seem to be going along with that line of, like, if he's such a good ninja, why do we all know about him?
Yes. And the impression you get from watching this is, like, the only bit of interesting history in Japan was the Warring States era.
Yeah. I mean, like, don't get me wrong, it's a really interesting point of history, but, like, have you not done other stuff, lads?
It's probably the same way here at Wayne, where everybody's obsessed with the Easter Rising and the War of Independence.
Sure.
Okay. You know?
Yeah. Big upheavals kind of thing. Yeah.
That was Time Bokan. So, Haybot. What happened in Haybot? I'll give you a quick Haybot report for the week. Oh, they were on a desert island.
And that's very Christmassy.
The Christmas episode was, strictly speaking, the previous week. And that wasn't very Christmassy either. And it seemed like a weird continuity issue as well.
Were they trapped on a desert island in the prior one? Or?
No, but there was characters trapped on a desert island who'd been in prior episodes and who weren't trapped on a desert island. So either there's duplicates of certain Vocabots.
Oh.
Or this is coming out of sequence because Christmas came along. Or Haybot doesn't care about continuity. And I can't
That's
believe the
entirely...
last
thing. I don't know, dude.
But there's important story elements that have been introduced over these 14 episodes, which are all going to pay off eventually. There's the people from the very first episode who appear to be like future versions of the current characters, one of whom's time traveled into the past.
One of who's wearing Haybot as armor.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a legendary group of four Vocobot battlers, and we've met one so far.
Mm.
And then they introduced the idea of cyborg people who are like cyborgs who can put the screws into themselves.
Oh, and the belt and everything. Yeah.
The Voca belt. So yeah, I'm pretty sure, despite appearances, this is all building to some dramatic ending.
Really?
Yeah, I'm sure the characters will then comment on how on earth could they get away with this dramatic ending. Like Osomatsu does one serious story.
Right.
Yeah. It's a gag in itself in this sort of show, is to suddenly change the tone to be super serious. Anyway, that was Haybot Report. It wasn't that good an episode.
Mm.
Right, next up, Tiger Mask Double, episode 12, Tiger versus Tiger. I take it you're not caught up yet, Niall.
No, I don't know. I've been seeing a few promos going about for the real world equivalent of this, I think.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They're doing this match at the Wrestle Kingdom on Wednesday.
Like the specific match?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's fucking cool. I wonder if they'll have the thing of him like fucking up his move a few times.
Possibly, because last time Kota Ibushi, who was in the Tiger Mask double costume, couldn't see properly out the mask.
I'm not surprised.
This time there'll be two of them who can't see properly out the masks.
So very well choreographed beforehand.
It's a game of blind man's buff.
I quite enjoyed this one. You called it on... what's your man's name? He's one of the...
Tanahashi.
So he can't win the next match. And I was like, so is he going to get cheaped out or what? And apparently he's just going to act like a fucking idiot is how he lost.
So yes, Tiger Mask accidentally injured him while they were practicing his finishing move before
practice
the match.
Your finishing move on me. It's like, what, before the match? It's like, yeah, fuck it, it'll be fine.
So they get to the match late in a taxi. Three masked wrestlers sharing a tiny taxi, which is a great image.
It's kind of like a clown car situation. Yeah.
So basically he loses by the young guy throwing the towel in.
And also, yeah, he's clearly going like, my shoulder, my unspecified shoulder injury. The whole match, like, so he can't wrestle to his fullest, and he keeps pulling off his signature moves. And
yeah,
is it Fukuyama or Fuku?
Fukuram? Yeah, I can't remember his name. The comedy mask guy. Yes,
comedy mask guy is commenting on this, and he recognizes all the moves. So I assume he's got it figured out. Like,
yeah, because they've got all the other mask guys back to do prelim bouts before the two main ones as well.
I love Miss X thing of her going. It's like, okay, so Wagner has retired forever, but you can totally come out the guy who was playing Wagner. And he's just like, ooh, that's bad. Because if I fuck this up, I don't have a mask that they can retire.
Yeah, she's like, Wagner has gone home and he's never coming back.
Yeah, it wasn't a great idea in the first place. But I like the two other guys who look like, you know, the like double John Cena kind of looking things.
It's kind of like a little meta commentary on how
they all look the fucking same.
WWE turns out identical wrestlers by having two guys who look exactly the same.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, you're totally not going to win Tiger of the Dark. And then his friend is like, hey, I got your back, buddy. You know,
yeah, there's lots
still
of
got
people,
that friendship plot going on.
Yeah, there's lots of people telling each other they'll be in their corner.
Yeah, yeah.
Because then the young guy goes into Tiger Mask corner for his match, and he's the first thing Tiger Mask says, don't throw the towel in.
Listen, I like you and all, but don't fucking do that. That was a dick move. Because, yeah, obviously, I mean, like, your man probably wasn't going to win against Yellow Devil, but he threw the towel in because it's like, okay, you're actually clearly injured from the get-go.
Yeah, and the manager's got four tickets, and we're like, oh, who's... And she's always wondering where who the other two tickets are for, and...
Oh, they're not here yet. That's really weird, looking across the aisle to the empty seats. Who could it be?
Yes, as Tiger the Dark is winning on Tiger Mask. He's got him in his finishing hold.
His brand new finishing... Like a killer move thing.
And
yeah.
Then the two people who the tickets for show up and start cheering Tiger Mask on, and it is Tiger the Dark's dad, who doesn't know that he's Tiger the Dark, in a wheelchair by the ring cheering Tiger Mask on.
Right, so the guy who's Tiger Mask went up to that wrestler and said, hey, I'm going to be Tiger Mask and I'm wrestling and I'm going to kind of get revenge for you, but I'm mostly doing it because it's the right thing to do. Like, but his son goes like, I bought my dad yogurt, don't tell him I did it. You know, that kind of thing. Yes. It's like, if you told him, hey, Dad, I'm Tiger the Dark in WWF, will you root for me? His dad probably would have been like, oh, absolutely.
I'm secretly infiltrating them to take down the guy who injured you. But no, so he's like, he falters, Tiger the Mask gets his fire back, and then he does his finishing move, which is like this. He basically throws the guy into the corner, does a running somersault.
Kicks off the person.
Yeah. And then you think, oh, is he going to do some sort of amazingly delicate move here? No, he just then knees them straight in the face.
Yeah, because they kept talking about, like, when he messed it up, he basically kicks off and was like, and they're like, what? That's it? Like a somersault kick? Okay. I mean, like, it looks great, but, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, he doesn't even land it. He just, like, knee into the head, opens up his own face, his old face wound, and falls on his arse.
Yeah, and you see, basically, he connects, and you see, like, the blood drip from the top of the screen to the mat, and you're like, oh, that's got him. And then he does Tiger Driver and pins him.
See, okay, quick thing about the you need your own original killer move. Could he not just do the rolling German suplexes? Because I thought those were pretty cool.
Yeah, but that's, we can't really say that's a Tiger Mask original.
Depends on how many he does. Like, if he does, like, seven fucking suplexes.
Septuple.
Okay, I'm perfectly fine with a brutal somersault knee to the face.
It's functional, don't get me wrong, but it's not very stylish. Because your man had that cool, Tiger the Dark even had that cool new lock. And I was like, ooh, that's a cool one.
Wait. You make it sound stylish. So he throws the guy into the corner, but then it's just like a flying knee to the face?
No. He runs at him, kicks off him so he gains some extra height. Like, he jumps straight up into the air and then, like, does a flip. Does he do a flip, or does he just straight up knee him in the face on the way down?
I think he flips, It's like a moonsault. It's like a running moonsault kickoff, and then on the spin back down, he knees him in the face.
it all of it leading up is pretty, like, fucking, you know, fabulous and shit. But then the knee to the face is kind of like, that wasn't that clever.
Yeah, because I thought he was going to be like a grab. I thought he was like going to grab him on the way down.
Yeah, do like a flip or something. But
it works. It works because it bloodied the guy's mask up then, and obviously
you got the shaky legs. Yeah,
yeah, that's what he's hoping to do to Yellow Devil in the next episode.
And Yellow Devil is just standing in the background, just not saying anything, walking away. You know, specifically going, like, I did like the Tiger Mask walking up to him. It's like, Yellow Devil. And Yellow Devil kind of looks at him, walks the other way, and is like, and as he's, I assume, out of earshot, is like, I'm gonna beat you. You know, it's like, dude, you probably should have said it to his face.
No, you won't.
Ah, dear. the preview for the next one looks like fucking the episode 4 quality again.
Yeah,
and there were parts of this one that were slightly off model, but it was kind of a little smoother for
it. Yeah,
it
was pretty good, and there were some spots where it looked like they'd, if not rotoscoped, used reference wrestling.
Yeah, I would have thought references. All right, yeah.
Mm. Particularly for like sort of the on the rope stuff looked like.
Yeah, yeah.
They were referencing something. Mm. But yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Maybe I better try and get up to speed then for this.
The interesting thing in various interviews with New Japan guys is they refer to WWE as a monopoly.
Like, so they can't say the name of it, so they just say monopoly.
Oh, no, they refer to WWE having a monopoly. So.
Oh, okay. I thought they were just calling it the monopoly.
No.
They've done a really good job in this, because the name of this tournament is WrestleMax, isn't it?
Yes.
And it uses the... I can't remember.
Font?
No, it's a very similar font and a similar color and a similar like style thing where the W is connected to like a line across the top of it. Is it SmackDown? No, it's not SmackDown.
Raw.
No, it's one of the big friggin' year tournament things.
WrestleMania.
It's WrestleMania because the W and the M form like a line on the bottom and top.
Ah, gotcha.
And I was like, they've done the graphic design where it's like, yeah, look, it's fucking WWF or WWE. I was just really impressed by it. I know it's a small thing, but
yeah,
that you've even got the titles down, you know?
And final thing for this week, Classicaloid episode 12, JS Bach, or Baha, depending on which character is pronouncing his name. It's interesting that some of them give it the Japanese pronunciation and some of them
can pronounce it.
GJS Baha of who let the dogs out, Baha?
Yes. As in Rage of Bahamut.
Wow. Yes. Must give me a contract.
So we meet JS Bach talking English out of his wig.
With his much cooler hair. I don't know why he wears the wig. Mm.
Well, the wig we see is like part of his music.
It's part of his costume, yeah.
It kind of is his other, like, his, I guess it's his normal clothes, his regular clothes. He walks around in this, just kind of looking more like Phoenix Wright character than that's the Lloyd character.
Yeah, I could see that. He's the cool guy, stubble, but not too much stubble. Sharp suit and all that kind of jazz. But yeah, the thing is, I assume as the audience, it's supposed to be obvious as fuck to us, right? That's not supposed to be hidden. It's like,
no.
Who is this mysterious man who showed up at the mansion? Because everyone else is talking about it partway through.
No, I think it's fairly clear.
Okay, it's just that I was like, it's pretty obvious who it is, but they kept cutting off, like, Chopin didn't get his text messages thing going, like, holy shit, you guys, Bach is here, watch out. You know, and I was like, were they trying to keep this as a reveal? Because, all right.
No, I don't think so. Surely anybody could have figured it out.
Pretty much, yeah. But the B plot of, besides him visiting the house, is it Beethoven and Mozart?
Mozart, yeah.
Mozart mostly by association.
Beethoven's like going in for at that music studio or... I can't remember the name of the company.
A few episodes ago when he did was in the guitar contest, he got some notice, so he got offered an audition at the studio, which is the one owned by J.S. Bach Industries or whatever it is.
Yeah, you have the two idols kind of reacting to this. Like, didn't he say he was going to leave them alone? And
it turns out it's the manager. No, the manager with the Yu-Gi-Oh hair.
The one who is probably the villain, but we still don't know her name. and Mozart has been picked up as he could make a good idol, apparently.
Yes.
And he's interested in that so he can just swear profusely at concerts.
Yeah, and also so he'll get to meet loads of women.
That too, yeah.
That's what they lure him in with. And then he finds out being an idol involves work.
And not swearing, so...
Also, don't want like being told what to do.
Yeah, and he's getting memories of how much he hated work and not having money. Constant like recurrences of that, whereas Beethoven's just having to be like, oh, you think you're so fucking great calling yourself Beethoven.
I am Beethoven. Yeah. I sure you are Beethoven.
Yeah, they're being real dicks.
Hmm. But there are classes going on in the phone. Now, the thing, you think you did phone do for your debut, the one thing you need is this. And everybody kind of arrive at that point. But they seem to have a lot. Oh, the one thing you need, the one thing you're missing. It's the one thing that we can offer you, and we're not going to tell you until we do whatever we say.
Yeah, so it's kind of like Mozart learning that it's like, dude, you need to work if you want to fuck. You need to work at it if you want to be successful in as an idol kind of thing. And Beethoven being told, you need to tick these fucking boxes if you want to be a successful artist. And then the counterpoint to that. Your man visiting the fucking mansion. I forgot.
Bach.
Why can't I remember everyone's name? Bach kind of going, it's like, oh, they're just in an environment where they're allowed to do what they want. Well, that's perfect for creative people.
Well, no, not quite, because they're not quite allowed to do what they want. It's because...
With some constraints.
It's because, I think if Kanai wasn't... He was worried that they are allowed to do what they want, but because Kanai is there, that puts his mind at rest to a degree that they don't have complete freedom.
They have freedoms, but not entire freedom. And someone gives out to them when they fuck up. Which is
They have constraints that they will try and rail against, but that'll just make them create better and better art.
Yeah, exactly. But it's kind of like showing the opposite of that, where they're actually at the studio trying to do the work, and it's like the constraints are actually so limiting they like refuse to work.
Yeah, yes. It's like one. Music's got to be free, man. You can't try and pin it down.
Well, that's like, pretty much Beethoven's response, yeah.
Well, you would know, of course, think that the guys who were buying Mr. Osamatsu would be like, yeah, man, when they come up to you and tell you that you can't swear on TV, don't listen to them, man. They're just trying to keep you down.
Yeah, so you got this weird philosophical battle then later on once their music start going out of control and Bach has to return and they... battle each other with their powers.
Yeah, and Bach is even kind of reacting to them saying, music's free, man. And he's like, I mean, like, I know that's kind of true, but it's not entirely true, but I can't say that right now because I'm fighting you.
Yes, but no.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Have to work within the framework of society.
Yeah.
So he definitely makes it clear that he's not the villain. It's just a philosophical difference, and he's kind of okay with them being at the house and not okay with the mysterious woman who doesn't have a name interfering in the way that she does.
Yeah, and even at the end of the episode she's like, whoops, my bad, and it's kind of like, that's specifically what he said not to do.
Also Sosuke was there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I forgot.
And there's something in the background there, but the plastic alloys need to be activated. Wants to find eight particular sounds, so we got eight classicaloids, eight sounds he's after, so that'll be revealed further down the line, I imagine.
So halfway through the series we still don't really know what classicaloids are.
Or
despite a quarter of the way in being promised we're going to be told.
It appears to be having too much fun fucking around, which I'm fine with.
Yeah, it's an interesting show, which I think people are overlooking.
I mean, like, when the animation does pick up as well, it's very much so worth watching. Oh, yeah. Don't we get a thing of your man at the job center again? Again, looking exactly like
Schubert,
job center.
Yes. old job center, aren't they?
And I liked your man's reaction of that's what they all say to everything he says.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he wants to be a teacher. He said, I'm a teacher. I was a teacher, yep.
You got a teacher license.
I bet I taught not. I got to make rent. Yeah, I know. I've heard that before. I got to like get into
my
Beethoven senpai. Oh, yeah, they all say that as well.
Yes, because the things he say, they all say that too. Become more and more things people don't say.
Yeah, it's like this is very particular to this guy.
I'm an android imbued with the personality of classic composer Schubert. Yeah. I've heard that one a million times, buddy.
Oh, poor Schubert.
Mm.
But, yeah, it's good to have that sort of victim character.
Sosuke got Baranowska's email address. So.
Oh, that's right. I guess that is some development for his character. He appears to have gone off the other one since he realized that the little girl is actually an old Russian man. But the other one is like, okay, this one's actually a woman, right? Historically, yes, she is a woman. So he's like creepily pleased with getting her email.
He is. Yeah, he was pretending, he was trying to convince them that he was Beethoven's manager, wasn't he?
Or his, you know, I'm his manager. I'm his like his buddy. He kept making up like a new thing that he clearly wasn't.
I'm his gentleman's personal gentleman.
Yeah, I wasn't quite playing off for anyone. But.
Right. So I think that wraps everything up. So what is there next week to add to this nonsense? Well, we don't know yet because Crunchyroll haven't announced all their.
Maybe nothing.
Possibly nothing. No. Certainly nothing so far that they've announced. Let me take a butcher's by start date at the winter.
I feel like by this time, this time this week anyway, would be a few things started up.
Yeah,
that Detective Boys Club should have aired today as we're recording, but I think anyone's announced they've got it yet. We've got the saga of Tanya, the whatever she was.
Yeah.
The awful, the terrible, the evil. That's what she was. It's the second as we're recording.
I think that's Acha is this week as well.
We might just miss that. I think that's January the 10th. I suppose with Japanese time, that might squeeze in.
Maybe. No.
Yeah, there's a lot of to be announced still, unfortunately.
Well, we're still watching a lot of stuff from last season anyway, so...
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff carrying over.
Don't think we need to worry about too much about adding new stuff, because most things we're watching carry on. But yeah, we've ended Drifters this week. That's it, everything else carries on. There we go.
Well, unless Tiger Mask W stops after the next one.
No, he doesn't, no. 39 episodes they've announced.
Keeps going. All right, Well, then I better get on top of that then, because it's going to be here for a while.
Yeah. It'll only be a third of the way through. Right, that ends this week's episode of Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime. Be back next week to hang with the Let's Go gang. And if you can't get enough of us, check out our regular podcasts at secretofthesailormadness.blogspot.com and dynamitingthebrain.com. Goodbye.
Bye.
Ciao.